This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
This half hour being brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV. You have multiple insurance needs. Purdy Insurance takes care of them all. Make sure you're fully insured. Do everything they can to save you money. Sometimes that's going over state lines where allowed. Other times maybe it's bundles. But they try to accomplish both goals every time. Primarily that you're fully insured, then saving you money. Great pros who happen to be really good people. And don't forget about the Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament next Wednesday at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club, benefiting the greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA. And we open up and get going with Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated on 3.com. Sir, welcome after another what appears to be for Penn State successful Lash Bash.
Yeah, successful is an understatement. Can you hear me, Steve? I'm on my headset right now.
Yep,
can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. And you need, every once in a while, you go into something like this. And if you can go out and hit the grand slam, it just sets the tone for everything else. It sounds like right out of the gate, they got the grand slam.
Kevin Brown, man, absolutely massive, massive commitment for Penn State. I would go as far to say that when you compare him to the 2025 guys who are committed, and you look at the 2026 guys who are committed, who are also very talented, he might be the best player they have committed. And out of all their guys right now. And I think that speaks really highly to his potential, who he is as a person, everything that Penn State wants in an offensive lineman. So, awesome pickup for them. Great kid. Fully committed, too. Like, he's not going to be a guy you got to worry about at all. I think Penn State fans should be incredibly excited about adding a guy that I think will be a five-star. We have him as a four-star at the moment, but a number 20, I want to say 28 in the nation, something like that, right around that ballpark. You know, if he stays at that high in the rankings, he'll absolutely end up being a five-star when it's all said and done.
What is it about Penn State where the fit is really great for him? We already know the fit's great Penn State to him.
You know, I would say proximity to home was massive. That was incredibly important to Kevin. But also, he's just a guy that gets all the Penn State things. You know, cares about academics, cares about family, wants to be a leader. You know, there's so many things there that, you know, if you ask James Franklin, what's the ideal recruit? You know, how do they carry themselves? What do they care about? I mean, that's Kevin Brown in a nutshell. And on top of that, you know, his dad played college football. He played at West Virginia. So he's been kind of, I don't want to say born and bred to be an offensive lineman, but technique, perspective, and all these little things, he's just so much more advanced, I think, than a lot of other guys at his age or even some that are older. So, I mean, to me, like I said, I think he may be the best player they have committed of any class right now. And that includes an all-star, great-looking quarterback, Troy Hume. He was just here this past weekend. Besides Mickens, of course, in 2026, who's also a top 100 guy. Then, of course, they just got Max Granville on campus and, you know, have a lot of other good players in 2025 as well. So I'm incredibly high on Kevin Brown. I think Penn State fans should be so excited about that. And, you know, I know just from talking to different sources that Penn State's very excited about it as well.
Right, so then there's the next part of this. I mean, sometimes you'll get a guy like this, and if it turns out that he's somebody that wants to recruit other players, they end up being a Pied Piper, which I refer to all the time. Does he have that kind of personality?
Just did that interview yesterday with him, man. You know, he was saying kind of basically that, did he want to do all the visits, and was he getting sick of phone calls? Yes. I mean, that was a part of him deciding early, but his other big part of this was, hey, I want to be a leader. You know, I want to be a guy who builds this class and helps build this class, you know, into something really special. And it's already, I mean, right now, it's incredibly early, of course, with 2026. But if you do look at the team ranking, they're number two in the country right now. Only Auburn's gotten off to a better start for 2026. So, yes, course, very early. They only have four guys right now, but three of them are top 100 prospects. So you put a guy like Messiah Mickens in there. He's already been building all these relationships. Troy Hewn, of course, he's out on the West Coast, but a very social kid. You know, absolutely will be connecting with guys. And then you add a Kevin Brown in there, a guy who is outspokenly saying, hey, I want to be a leader. I want to build relationships and take this class to another level. Well, I mean, could Penn State fans ask for a better start for 2026? I don't think you can, as far as you got really talented players and you got guys that want to get out there and do some peer recruiting.
Ryan, what about the next part of this? Because Lash Bash isn't just about one guy coming in. They bring about more than 60 prospects in. How important to you is the element of bonding with guys that then help create a class?
Right. So Penn State did a great job this year of separating the event into two events. So Friday was a lot about 2026 players, 2027. You know, I think Messiah Mickens was the only one really there on Friday. And then, of course, then on Saturday was a lot about, well, we got a majority of our committed players. I think it was about 14, 15 or so of the committed guys on campus. And then, of course, they brought in a few other 2025 guys as well, which you guys can read about over on our site. But, I mean, some guys who are committed elsewhere, you know, some players who I think could be making decisions here in the near future. And just from talking to those players, those guys who are wavering right now, maybe on a commitment elsewhere, or, you know, wavering between Penn State and other schools, this absolutely had a massive impact on them. I was just talking to one guy last night. You know, he's talking about how he spent a lot of time with Alex Tash this past weekend, and, you know, he thought that their personalities really clicked. So just a lot of positive feedback from that. And then, of course, you know, you want the commits and their families to bond as well, right? The stronger you can get your committed class together, especially with however many months it is until signing day, well, the better your chances are of retaining. And that isn't just with the recruits. I mean, that's with the families as well. I've talked to so many parents who, you know, talk about how the bond they built with so-and-so and this player's parents and this player's parents. And, you know, when the families are able to build those bonds, you know, not only, you know, just carry over the years and make it a strong class, but it helps keep everything together. And in today's world, where coaches are always trying to poach other players, that's incredibly important.
Ryan, obviously, there's always time between this and a signing day, and in the case of some guys, it's going to be, you know, it's not this year, it's the year after. But what has Penn State done recruiting-wise the last couple of years, and this year in particular, where they go from June 1 and they get to the Lash Bash and seem to be getting a haul?
Yeah, well, I mean, you can say it about a lot of schools, honestly. I mean, it's just the way the recruiting calendar works. Of course, with kids out of school, you know, it makes it easier for players of all different age groups to visit in the summer, and that's a big part of it. And what you're really seeing is you're seeing a lot of guys who, like Kevin Brown, right, who have done some spring visits, not really into the recruiting process. Okay, I'm going to make a move early. And then you have the opposite, where you have a lot of 2025 guys for this year, of course, who did go all the way basically until official visits are in June. And then they do that, you know, there's always a surge in late June, July. And that's really, I mean, that's what we see for at least the 2025 class all across the country this year. I mean, Penn State picked up, I don't think it was about a dozen, but it was up there as far as 8, 9, 10 guys for the 2025 class within a handful of weeks. And you're going to keep seeing that moving forward, I think. This is the way the recruiting calendar set up.
NIL, of course, is going to play a role no matter what. What kind of job has Penn State done on the NIL front to improve Penn State's NIL and make it competitive with others?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, Steve, because I can't get a lot of people to talk about it, and I don't know really the reasonings behind that. Maybe I mean I think part of it is because Penn State has to improve, and I think maybe sometimes they're worried that a journalist may put, you know, some different numbers out there that not people are okay with, you know, but of course they just had that Avalon event, which was pretty successful from the feedback we've gotten. And, you know, it's really just about everybody kind of buying in. And I do think fans are getting more used to that. And I also believe that, you know, fans are seeing the revenue sharing coming, and they also believe, well, this is going to get taken off our plate. And I got bad news for people who are joking right now, but that's not going to change. These collectives are here to stay, whether Penn State's, you know, able to put in 12, 15 million of their own money to football. You know, who knows what that number will be. But my point, though, is the collectives are usually going to kind of be the cherry on top that I think a lot of schools use for recruiting purposes, maybe to, you know, to boost their chances with other players. So I think when you look at, just from the feedback I've gotten, like, they've done a good job at getting guys that deserve to be at Penn State and then going a little bit above and beyond with some of these guys who are from outside the region. I think that's why you're seeing a little bit of some of these more recent commitments from guys that aren't really from the area. And then, of course, they're doing a great job with the guys who, you know, knew Penn State growing up, care about, you know, all the things that Penn State stands for. And, you know, they're doing their best to make sure those guys are compensated. But James has stuck to his gun, you know, when it comes to, you know, making sure the guys who deserve it and earn it on the field are going to be the team's highest earners. And I don't really see that changing. Now, at the same time, a lot of schools are doing a different approach, and that is a massive reason why, you know, we've seen some recruits that we thought would definitely end up at Penn State have gone elsewhere, especially with late decisions. I mean, we've seen quite a few guys maybe make a late move 72 hours before they're supposed to announce. So it's kind of how all you look at it and how you want to approach it. And of course, with revenue sharing coming, that's going to add a whole nother, charge to this apple, I guess you could say, as far as what Penn State and how they got to do to navigate this.
Well, no, I think that when it comes to the latter part, the problem is going to be for the ACC schools. I don't know if they have the money.
For sure.
Right? I don't know if they have the money to do it. It's not like a Big Ten school where you've got that big TV package that helps at least supplement part of it. You're going to have to get donations. But there's another element to it. Sometimes I don't know what's real in NIL reporting and what isn't. And I'll give you an example of a basketball player. I'm not going to say the name of the player, but it's been claimed that this player got $2 million to make the move as a fifth-year player. And then I talk to people I know and trust, and they tell me it was $800,000, that the agent's floating it. The school loves the fact that it was floated. So I'm not so sure some of the numbers are as big as people claim them to be, because you and I both know people.
They're certainly not. I think we can find substantially more cases where numbers are inflated, right? And look, let's be honest, a lot of those numbers are coming from agents or coming from players' families, whoever it may be, that want people to believe these massive numbers when maybe they're not exactly true. So here's one thing I will say, though, is one of Penn State's commits, again, I'm not going to say who exactly, you know, they had a $300,000 offer to go to a certain school, and they passed that up to come to Penn State for a variety of different reasons. So it's all about finding the guys that really fit your program, care about, you know, getting to the next level, care about development, obviously academics and everything socially. And Penn State's done a good job with that. But again, you know, for some of these really highly rated guys, we're seeing schools throw around silly money, and it's usually silly money at the very end. And that's why I feel like if you're a fan and you've been watching the 2025 class and, you know, you're seeing some disappointments, well, you got to understand that some of these schools are throwing money around to guys that absolutely will probably come back to hurt them in the end, honestly.
What kind of foundation did they lay with others along the way, maybe guys that they're still trying to get involved in 25, but especially in 26?
Yeah, I mean, they're at 21, probably 22 commitments, I believe. They have a player tomorrow, Ivan Camaggio. We believe he's going to commit to Penn State. Virginia Tech's in the mix there, maybe Rutgers and a few others. But I think they're going to get him tomorrow. I put in a prediction for him a couple days ago. But my point there is they only got a handful of scholarships left with 2025. I think they want to maybe try and get another receiver or two. They're poking around at linebacker. And, you know, I will be curious, Steve, to see how this 105 scholarship impacts maybe what what they do late in this cycle, because, you know, now they kind of have reason to maybe try and they're always going to try and flip guys, but now they have reason to maybe take a few more chances on a couple players too. But, of course, you have the walk-ons on the team, right? And I think James wants to make sure that, you know, those guys who have been there and have, you know, helped the program over the last couple of years, you know, they don't just get ran off the team. So that's going to be an interesting topic within itself. To get back to 2026, you know, I think the big thing for this weekend was really about evaluation. They handed out a ton of different offers, a lot of local guys, a lot of guys who were kind of floating under the radar too. You know, as far as how the last batch impacted those guys, you're always going to have great feedback. But to me, the biggest takeaway was they got a lot of talented players on campus this past weekend. As you said, about 60 plus, and probably about 70-80% of them camped. And, you know, that may not sound like a big number when you think about the previous camps and how you have hundreds and hundreds of players, but you also got to understand that the ratios of those camps when it comes to true FBS talent is like 10%, maybe not even. So this weekend to me was a really good opportunity for Penn State to get accurate evaluations on a lot of those 2026 guys that we're going to be talking about. And some of them are going to have great junior seasons, and we're going to be talking about them a ton, while others are going to kind of, you know, not pan out, right? Exactly, right? So I think that's the big takeaway now, because this junior season, the junior season evaluation for the film and everything, that's going to have a really big impact on how this board looks, you know, maybe how it looks now compared to how it's going to look 8 months from now.
You mentioned the camp part of it. How, you know, there's just no price you can put on the ability to see someone live and in person. What has that meant from Penn State's point of view about committing to a guy because he camped and they saw it for themselves?
If you look at the guys who have camped at Penn State over the years and have gotten offers, the hit rate on them ending up, you know, producing and what Penn State expects is always pretty high. Or at least, you know, for if you depend on the guys who maybe you haven't, right? Or guys who maybe didn't do Under Armour camps and other ways that Penn State can collect that information. But, you know, James would be the first to tell you that they care a lot about those testing metrics. And as you should. I mean, to see a guy, for example, Jasir Rogers, right? This is a player who just committed this past weekend. Guy from Delaware who, you know, had Indiana and JMU before Penn State offered. And I think a lot of fans would be like, who is this guy? What made them take him so early? Well, my man had almost an 11-foot broad jump, Steve. Mm-hmm. If you know anything about evaluations and explosiveness, I mean, those numbers are insane. I mean, I can't really think of – the only person I could think of had even close to that was Peter Gonzalez last year, who was right around 11 as well. So I just think that to be able to really understand and see how explosive a player like he is, and then, of course, he also had a 40 number that was pretty incredible as well. I mean, that's why he's part of this class now. And he will be part of this class as long as some other schools don't try and poach him away, which I don't think they will. So it's massively important. It will always be important because you can get numbers from Under Armour. You can get numbers from all these different camps. But, you know, when you're not there that day, you don't know how windy it was to maybe aid that 40 or, you know, the rainy conditions that, you know, made a guy slip and have an 8.5 broad jump compared to a 9.5, you know, something like that. So I think that's where those live in-person evals are just massively important.
You mentioned one guy that's probably on the verge of saying yes. How close are there and any others here in this class?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, right now I'm really kind of focused on Yvonne. He's the most, as far as 20, or the most, he will be the soonest, I guess is the right way to put it. You know, they hosted Cam Smith this past weekend. You know, he's committed to Duke. We'll see where that goes. I think Cam Smith wanted to be part of this class months ago, and it really was unfortunate for Cam because they had DJ McClary committed at the time, and then Alex Tash committed maybe like 2 or 3 days before Cam. And that put Penn State in a tough spot because, yes, they knew that there was a chance they'd take a third linebacker, but it was so early in the cycle that they didn't want to overload on a position that isn't at the very top of needs this year, especially when you look across the board and, you know, what they have. But so much has changed since then. The 105 scholarship rule was just, you know, became official the other day. That makes it kind of easier for them to find more guys to add. Of course, DJ McClary then decommitted as well, and that's probably the main thing that has Cam Smith back in the mix. But this is a player who I think really likes Penn State, wants to be at Penn State. I always felt like he did want to be at Penn State. And then, of course, he goes on to commit to Manny Diaz at Duke, which, you know, also kind of shares his connection with this staff that he's built over, you know, 2+ years now. So Cam would be one to watch, and, you know, we'll see with receivers. Kobe Howard was up this past weekend. He's not planning to announce until the end of August. His team, Shaman Amadonna, they have a ESPN game, I believe, on August 24th. He's looking to announce there. We'll see where things go. You know, I think they'd love to flip another receiver or two. Time will kind of tell who emerges there. But, you know, they're going to keep plugging away at a lot of these talented players who ended up going to other schools. And I think when we get closer to that time where they really got to sign, you know, those players will start thinking about, man, do I really want to go 1,500 miles away from home? You know, that's usually where you kind of see schools like Penn State be able to wiggle their way back in there.
And very quickly here at the end, I mean, with Ohio State November 2nd, then the whiteout very late this year, November 9th. How interested are you to see how those two weekends play out with the signing date so close after that?
Yeah, I mean, well, look, I mean, if you just look at the timing of it, that's when high school playoffs start, right? So that's going to be incredibly compelling to see. You know, certainly a lot of talented players won't be in it, but you know, for the most part, when you have these very talented Division I players on your team, you do usually end up to the playoffs. And at least in Pennsylvania and a lot of the regional states, you know, they play a lot more on Saturdays in the playoffs than they do necessarily on Fridays just because of the way it is, the schedule fields and all that. So I do think that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on. Now, with that said, you know, last year's Michigan game was an absolutely excellent list. It wasn't as good as what the Iowa whiteout list was, And that's a big reason why Penn State is looking to have games more so in the evening for their marquee events like the White House. That's not the only reason. Don't get me wrong. Fans want it that way. Penn State wants it that way from to sell their brand perspective. But it certainly helps with recruiting when you can get players on campus later in the day on a Saturday over having a game potentially at noon for Ohio State. And, we'll see what happens with Washington. But the timing of it isn't ideal. Usually it's the very last game in November when it's kind of Thanksgiving break where everybody's a little more open, especially with it being the first, second week of playoffs. But we'll see. I'm very interested in seeing what happens there.
Brian, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much for all the great information.
No problem, Steve. We'll talk soon, buddy. Take care.
Ryan Snyder on 3.com, Blue White Illustrated. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn while they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Terrific service department that backs it up, routine to difficult. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. I can tell you right now, they will give you a great buying experience, great inventory to choose from. You have a sales staff that works with you and wants to make sure that your needs are met, both financially as well as the vehicle. It's a great staff. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And time now for the opportunity to have great conversation with the outstanding Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
You bet. As always, it's great to be here. I hope
Hope you guys are enjoying all the training camp action so far.
Yeah, a lot of training camp action to this point. I know a lot of the teams go out and they right away do a free day in their stadium so the fans can get an opportunity to see their teams for the first time. They don't get to see much, but then again, it's the price of admission is free along the way. It's one of the great things that the NFL does along the way, that at least it has some fan outreach, because after that, you're paying through the nose.
Yeah, it's funny. Maybe this is where you're going with it. I just had a lengthy discussion with a bunch of people about it. Off the top of my head, I forget if it was Lane Kiffin or some college coach that in explaining why they were paying or they were charging now to let fans in to watch practice at the college level. Nothing is free now in the NIL world. I just think it's such a poignant quote. And it's something the NFL deals with all the time. They tend to let them in to give fans an experience, kind of hype up the team a little bit. And it's not as if there are other things that they can charge for. I mean, I know at La Trobe, the Steelers have, there's a bunch of stuff around that people can spend money on. So it's not like it's completely, without profit for the team. There's a lot of things that you can do within their own stadium, within their own environment. So they're good experiences. I think it's more fun to watch kind of how the hamburger is made in that sense. I don't think the Steelers would put backs on backers in front of people if they felt the need to charge for it. But that's definitely something that fans like to watch. That's a good event to watch. You can really see real football action. I know you and I have talked about it a bunch over the years. That's you're really seeing contact at a high level, at a largely uncontrolled level. Fans getting into the stadium, being able to get closer to that kind of thing. It's fun to watch if you're really into football, and a lot of things that you can get from that, and teams that open the doors up to fans, I think, are doing the right thing. But there are some that don't. They may not charge to get in necessarily, but they do have different events that are paid events throughout camp. And I have nothing against typically somebody making a buck off whatever they're doing, but I think you gotta, there's a certain sense of responsibility to give back a little bit, to let people see what you're doing. People that support your product, patronize your product throughout the year, give them a little bit. I think some teams have a better sense of that than others.
Very quietly, this is one of those under-the-radar stories, but the FCC eliminated the blackout rule this week. Now, it doesn't mean you can't have it built into your TV contracts, but that's always been something with the NFL. If you didn't sell out within 72 hours of the game would be blacked out in your local market. And the FCC eliminated that today. I mean, now, does that mean that everybody can see whatever? But I thought it was a big move for anybody that wants to put their product on, quote, free TV or cable. What did you think?
If you want to put your product out nationally and you want to grow, you're essentially giving that away, because the thought is they don't have an easy opportunity to get to whatever stadium it is to watch it. So in other words, as far as the SEC goes, dude up in Minnesota can watch on SEC Network if that's offered by my cable provider.
Sure.
Somebody living in Georgia doesn't necessarily, Georgia's probably the bad example, Tennessee doesn't necessarily have the luxury of that because of the blackout rule. And in my mind, it's antiquated. That's just not simply how things work anymore. Good on them for eliminating it, just because it's silly. I understand, again, they're going to make a dollar on what they're doing. I don't have a problem with that. But you're pulling in serious money with the TV contracts, and the issue is more that, as I understand it, that the schools get more of their gate than a higher percentage of their gate than they would the media contract that they have as far as their network goes. So I can understand why you might try to protect that, but there comes a point that you're really we're talking deck chairs on the Titanic here. You want people locally to be able to see your product. Watching it on TV with technology being what it is, and this is an argument that was stale 10 years ago, let alone today, People have, you know, high levels of convenience within their own homes. It's not just about going to see the game and paying the ticket that's the issue. It's more, this is just a better experience. And college football has been a part of the whole spear, not just the tip of it, but the entire spear of advancing the overall experience. It's not just about viewing it in person. There is absolutely a lot that goes into the broadcast, the entire digital experience, how much more that you can get at home that you might not be able to get at the stadium. I'm not saying one is better than the other. That's up to your own choice. But there's plenty to be said about a diehard, if such a thing exists, a diehard Vanderbilt fan wanting to be able to watch their games without having to go to the stadium to do it. And it's not just a cost thing. That's usually what the argument is. Well, we don't want to, you know, have to pay the money to go do it. That might not even be the case. What if it's just a better experience? What if I don't want to go sit outside in Tennessee in 104-degree weather to watch the game? What if I'd rather just watch it at home? I would think that they would want to cater to that mentality as well, because, frankly, it's 2024. I have a nice setup that I enjoy watching games at home. I don't want to have to go to the stadium to do that. I can totally understand why it's something that, you know, conferences, certainly at the NFL level as well as college football, all of them should embrace that mentality more than anything. And we know that the NFL has. It's not that they can't sell out. It's just that they pump a lot of money into the product at home. You know, broadcast holders spend a lot of money, and in turn, they invest a lot of money into their product to make a good at-home experience. That matters. You know, it's not just for the national fans. The local fans can get in on that as well. I think that is something other places in college football should cater more to.
By the way, how many TVs do you have on during a Sunday?
Three, and one of them has a split screen on. If we count the laptop hook up to a monitor as a TV, I've got three of them on.
Okay. And one of them is on the Steelers, I assume.
Of course, that'll be the main one. Yeah. Always, you got Red Zone on another, and then it's kind of I'll flip through and watch whatever I want. I will say YouTube TV has the multi screen, right, so I could put four games on the one TV. As weird as this sounds, that freaks me out too much. It's a little too much stimulation. And I'm not a big Red Zone guy. Now, I know that I'm probably not the norm. I know a lot of people that their entire viewing experience is Red Zone the entire day. I like to watch all of it. I like the build up. I like to see where everything is going. I would prefer to flip around to games on my own. That's just the control freak in me, I guess. But overall, it's fun to be able to see the league all operating at one time. I enjoy that part. I enjoy seeing the league in action, and kind of choosing what I want to watch at whatever time. So different things are on different games, and I'll change those up with the exception of the Steelers. And then the afternoon games, you know, there aren't as many, so the options aren't as good. You try to get as much of a look into this situation or that team or watching this guy play for a series as you can. And I feel it scratches the right itch as far as what you want to be able to watch, when you want to be able to watch it, but still get the full game experience, which is truly what I am. I mean, given the choice, I'd prefer just to watch one game. But since I don't have to do that anymore, I you know, kind of like to dip my toes around and see what else is out there. And I think that's definitely the younger generation where things are going. What we refer to as the sports bar experience. If you can get like five games on at once, some people like, you know, being able to kind of tilt their head back and forth and keep going. Some of it is good for me, but just one game. I don't like having multi-screens on one TV with other games on the others.
All right, so now let's get to the Steeler part of it. With camp now underway, and you're not going to solve this question in camp, but by the time we get to the third game of the season, what are a couple of concerns that they need to null out that by the time they get to game three, it'll give you an indication about what kind of team this actually is?
That's a great question, isn't it? I mean, I think it all comes down to that. And another topic we've discussed previously you almost use week one as another preseason game. Yeah. It's not that it doesn't matter, but I don't. I guess you can make the exception of San Francisco last season. It looked phenomenal in week one when the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't. Most teams are not playing particularly well in week one. If you look at it just isolated, assignment-based, player-to-player, they don't look as sharp as you think that they would in a regular season game. You work through that. So if we want to call it a two-week dress rehearsal, by the end of that, though, you're exactly right. You have to have everything set. For the Steelers, I think it's really a question of what's their personnel assignment going to look like. You know, I think we have a sense, at least, that Arthur Smith wants to run bigger formations. He wants to likely, I don't want to say play small ball and run, but he's going to have a physical passing game, which is to say he's going to isolate tight ends often. They're going to run seams. I don't think they're going to do a whole lot of wide receiver isolation stuff. I think they're really going to want to run the ball and be creative in that, use motion to set up their running game. A lot of that is timing and precision. So I would say from a cleanliness of execution perspective, in other words, are they running these things without errors? Is their timing down? If they're getting beat at the point of attack, that's one thing. But are guys where they're supposed to be? Is the snap getting off cleanly? Is the handoff clean? All of these things that you need reps to develop. It's a new offensive line, new coordinator, again, a new quarterback. It's going to take some time to kind of develop that. I think week three is probably a good mark. I'm not sure this isn't the type of Steelers team we'll see offensively that doesn't it grossly outperform where it starts. You know, it could be a pretty rough start right away. It could be pretty blah, you know, something I guess we're kind of used to watching their offense the last couple of years. But I think they will get all of that down. They will improve. And that curve probably tilts in their favor by week three, or it should anyway, if we are in fact going to continue to blame Matt Canada for everything. It probably would take root by week three. If after week three it's still not there, then I think you've really got a problem in terms overall of just general direction with your team, because you can't be bottom basement offensively in the NFL for, you know, going on 60 some odd games, which is where the Steelers have been, really. I think we will see a lot of that take root on the later end by week three, but more coordination, more the cleanliness of everything that they're doing, the sharpness of what they're doing. I think by week three, that should be set in place.
How interested are you about the makeup of the offensive line, considering that the first two picks, Neil, were offensive linemen?
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Two tackles, a position that they haven't drafted in 30 years or whatever it is. You are now in the also rarefied air of having to decide between two first-round picks of who's going to play on the left, who's going to play on the right. It's a great problem to have. It's one that I look forward to seeing the progress develop. But it's also interesting because between Broderick Jones and Troy Fatano, they're very different style players. And they're very different in terms of experience and athleticism. Jones is a hyper elite athlete. You know, you saw it at times last season as he's coming along as a young player, high level, you know, top five in his position level athlete, who's very raw. Didn't get a whole lot of snaps in college. He was that good. He was going to leave early. Obviously, a lot to like about him build-wise, functionality-wise. You get a lot of great things out of him, justified top 15 NFL pick. The Steelers were probably right to not play him as much. Fatanu is not the physical beast that Jones is, and again, very few are. Nothing against him at all. Jones, I don't think, Fatanu, I don't think a whole lot of people would say Jones was better than him as a college player. I think Fatanu is far more developed, much more aware of what he's doing, much more technically sound, and ironically, it's more like he's the guy who's ready to play now versus Jones, who's got a year on him over in the NFL. Whether they go right or left, you talk to any coach, there are thousands of reasons that you don't consider at all whether you're putting a guy on the left side or the right side. For me, it ultimately it matters, but you have to factor in the player's comfort. Now, if you're going to get the honest answer out of a player, and not be jaded by the fact that typically where we are now, and it's not nearly as sharp as it was 10 years ago, but where we are now, the left tackle tends to make a lot more money than the right tackle does. I don't think Troy Fatanu wanted to get drafted by a team that was going to play him on the right side. I think he would have rather played on the left side. And I also think, though, that that's more of a contract thing. And there are plenty of teams that have paid both a right tackle and a left tackle because their offense is more ambidextrous. They're okay going one way or another. And with that, they solidify run blocking, pass protection on, you know, similar feet. And with that, it makes sure they can go either way with whatever play they're going to run. And it's because of the skill of their edge protector. So between the two of them, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you could go. But if I was coaching them, and everyone's happy that I'm not, I honestly, Fatanu would probably be my left tackle today over Jones. And some of that is an experience factor. But a large part of what I'm trying to do is going right-handed, running the ball, having my power side be on the right side. And Jones is just such a behemoth. He is so quick off the snap. He can climb to the second level in a way that Fatanu can't. I've got really a primary running lane there and an outlet kind of backdoor screen option with Jones out there. Or, you know, if from an offensive perspective, too, you tend to want to motion right to left. We saw Jones last year doing stuff that Shanahan does in San Francisco with Trent Williams in putting Jones in motion. You know, they move him right to left. To do that, to have that kind of a power side, flip things around on a defense and give them a second to kind of figure out what's going on, those sorts of things are lethal. And you have that ability with Jones. So it's almost like, in a way, you can hide him on the right side, still have that dominant hand if you want to play the game right-handed, which I'm not saying you have to, but you can do that and still have a good backside protector and a backside option for delays and things like that. There's just simply a lot of versatility that you have with the two choices that they've made. I'll contend forever. I don't think the Steelers expected Troy Fatanu to be at 20 when they drafted him.
That's right.
I don't think their plan was to go get another tackle, but I also think he was a lot better than the other guys who were on the board. I didn't even think he was there. I heard his name. I was like, that guy hadn't been drafted yet?
Yeah.
Excellent pick, and they have a lot of very good problems to have with their offensive line now. You know, no team has put more into their offensive line in the last 2 years than the Steelers have. And I honestly think whatever way you want to go, I'm not sure it's really going to matter because there are a lot of good things they're going to get from either one of them out on the field, to say nothing of the fact that you also get to remove Dan Moore from the field, which, you know, to be honest, is probably one of the biggest additions this offseason for any team. They might have one of the three best offensive lines in the league this season. And you're going to see a lot of good things from both Jones and Fatanu, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Always a pleasure, sir. Thanks so much, Neil.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
This half hour has been brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.